Now the full number of those who believed were of one heart and soul, and no one said that any of the things that belonged to him was his own, but they had everything in common. Acts 4:32. I am Rob West. That passage clearly shows the radical generosity of the first century church. How does that compare with church giving today? We're off today, so please hold your phone calls. This is MoneyWise on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial journey. Okay, so the church advancement team at Generis and the Barna Group did a survey to find out the status of giving today. It's called Revisiting the Tithe and Offering, and it revealed a lot about how Christians are supporting the local church. Giving, of course, doesn't involve just money. As the saying goes, Christians should be generous with their time, talent, and treasure. But not surprisingly, the vast majority of pastors, 94%, reported that they view member giving primarily through the lens of tithes and offerings, far exceeding other forms of generosity. I'll inject a personal note here. I look forward to the day when that's not the case, when tithes and offerings are such that finances don't have to weigh so heavily on the minds of pastors. They have enough on their plate with feeding the flock that they shouldn't have to worry about money. Okay, obviously tithes and offerings are vital to the local church, so it's also not surprising that 98% of pastors said their church is primarily funded through individual donations. That much, I think, is good. The local church should be funded through member giving rather than investment earnings or an endowment of some type. A church should have an emergency fund, something like a year's worth of operating expenses. But assets beyond that should be used for ministry or missions, in my opinion. Now, there's some good news about Christian generosity as compared to Americans as a whole. Studies show that 60% of U.S. adults give to a charitable organization during the course of a year. Nominal Christians, those who don't attend church at least monthly or say their faith is important to them, give at about the same rate as the general population. But a full 90% of practicing Christians who do attend church at least monthly and say their faith is important to them give to charity on an annual basis, and that charity includes giving to their local church. What does all this mean? Well, it actually makes perfect sense. In general, Christians are more generous than the population as a whole, as they should be. And believers who feel strongly about their faith and attending church regularly are more generous than those who don't. Exactly what you'd expect. And the average amounts of giving track perfectly with those three groups. U.S. adults give an average of $916 a year to charities. Nominal Christians give slightly more, $1,165 a year. And practicing Christians give $3,000 a year, or more than triple that of the average American adult, two-thirds of which goes to their local church. Now, we occasionally get calls from listeners who want to know if it's okay to give their tithes and offerings to something other than their local church. We believe your tithes should go to your local church. It's wonderful to give sacrificially to other ministries, but your first fruits should go where you're fed. So it's encouraging to see that the survey revealed most Christians agree. A full 75% think it's more generous to give to their local congregation. That clearly shows a commitment to the local church with regard to giving. The next finding isn't quite so encouraging. While 55% of believers agree that all church members should financially support their local church, 51% also said that there may also be circumstances when it's okay not to. An example of that would be volunteering at the local church. Surprisingly, about 60% of Christians in general, meaning nominal and practicing combined, said that members who are committed to volunteering have less of a financial obligation to support the church. And even more surprising, that percentage held true for practicing Christians. 60% of those who attend regularly and hold strongly to their faith also believe that volunteering can be a substitute for financial giving. In my opinion, that's not right. Don't get me wrong, volunteering is important to the church, and every member should look for ways to be of service. But if every member gives time and not a tithe, you soon wouldn't have a church. Volunteering should only be viewed as a substitute for financial giving when you're unable to be a percentage giver to your church. And even then, you should always try to give something as a form of worship. Well, there you have it. Some good news about church giving today and some not so good. It's all something to pray about as the collection plate comes around this Sunday. As I said, we're off today, so don't call in, but we've got some great calls lined up in advance, so we'll go to those just around the corner. I'm Rob West, and we'll be right back.
On American Family Radio, hi, I'm Barry McGuire. I'm here to help you understand how urgent and how fun it is to share your faith at every opportunity through the eyes of a layman. As bad as COVID is, and it's bad, far more lives are being lost and destroyed by government edicts and violence, leaving everyone asking if life will ever be the same again, and it probably won't. Behind the scenes, Satan is manipulating power brokers and power-hungry politicians and evildoers of all types and descriptions to lead us down the path of destruction for America and the world. But here's the good news. Satan's filled the entire world with fear and confusion, which are the two highest motivators for prompting people to seek God's help and protection. This is an incredible moment of opportunity to let your light shine. Almost everyone is desperate to know God like you know him. And the worse it gets, the easier it will be to tell them, and God will flood your life with joy regardless of what's going on around you. There is nothing more exciting than knowing God is using you to move people closer to him. Join us at IgniteAmerica.com.
Christian Healthcare Ministries enables believers to meet their healthcare costs affordably, biblically, and compassionately. It's not insurance, but a voluntary cost-sharing ministry based on the biblical example of Christians sharing each other's needs. And members aren't fined under the law for not having health insurance. Christian Healthcare Ministries might be your health cost solution. Call 800-791-6225 or visit chministries.org.
Washington Watch.
This is a crisis of our own making, and that hard-nosed determination to not admit it for political reasons is just really, truly disheartening.
Yeah, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but on this particular issue, the contrast between the policies of the two administrations could not be sharper. As I've mentioned here on the program many times, I was at the border a little over a year ago. It was like a ghost town.
Weekday afternoons at 4 Central and Saturday evenings at 6 Central on American Family Radio.
Siri, I need some advice.
What's up?
I have questions about planning for retirement, long-term care insurance. I don't know where to start.
It sounds like you need the MoneyWise app. It's a free app that will help you find those answers and more.
Really?
Sure thing. You can ask your questions within the app and access helpful articles and MoneyWise podcasts.
Sounds great. Siri, download the MoneyWise app.
Okay, searching for MoneyWise on the App Store. Learn more at app.moneywise.org.
Do you feel like your hands are tied with debt, preventing you from serving God? If you have credit card debt, Christian credit counselors can help. Through our debt management program, we can get you out of credit card debt about 80% faster while honoring your debt in full. For more information on how Christian credit counselors can help, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org. Or call 800-557-1985. 800-557-1985.
Thankful to have you along today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, your host. Phone lines aren't open today since this is a recorded program, but we have some great questions we think you will find helpful. All right, let's dive in. We'll begin today in Seattle, Washington. Marie, thank you for calling. Go right ahead.
Yes, I was wondering, I just learned of a RMD, and I will be charged like 20% tax on the amount that I have to take out that I required. Yeah. And I was wondering if I put it into an annuity, would I still need that to pay that much tax, or is there some other way to decrease the amount?
Yes. Well, you do have to take that money out, and unless you do what's called a qualified charitable distribution, you will have to pay tax on it. Now, if you were to take then and turn that around and put it into what's called a qualified annuity, then you would be able to take a deduction against your gross earnings. But I think the first step is to make sure you satisfy the required minimum. When it comes out, based on the IRS's schedule or table that tells you, based on your balance and age, what you need to take out each year, you would decide, I think, first, do you want to take that out and pay tax on it, or do you want to give it to a charity or ministry? That's a great option, especially if you want to offset giving you were going to do out of cash, money that you had in a checking or savings account, where you could essentially make the same gift through a qualified charitable distribution. But when you do it that way, the ministry gets the full amount of the gift and you don't add it to your taxable adjusted gross income for the year. So would you be interested in that piece of it, or would you rather take it out, pay the tax, and then turn around and either put it into some sort of investment or annuity?
Well, I could put it into a different investment.
You could, yeah. So you would, if you take it out, other than through the qualified charitable distribution where you'd make it a gift to a ministry or your church, you would take it out. It would be added to your taxable income for the year. And then you would then decide, okay, what do I want to do with it? And I would always look at that decision in light of your overall goals and objectives. Do you need to shore up your emergency fund? Do you have 3 to 6 months or perhaps more than 6 months worth of expenses in a savings account? If not, you could use this for that purpose. Do you want to put it away for the future? And if so, where's the best place to grow it? Do you want to add it to an investment portfolio that you have, especially while the market is down? This might be a good time to go ahead and take and invest this. Do you want to pay down debt if you have any consumer debt? So tell me about your goals at this point, Marie, and let's determine what the best next step might be for you.
Well, I do have debt that needs to be paid first, I think, okay. Before.
Yeah. So tell me about that. What do you have in the way of debt?
Mainly credit cards, about $30,000.
Okay. And how much do you need to take out as a required minimum this year?
I'm not positive. They haven't told me yet.
Okay. All right.
Maybe about $5,000.
Okay. Well, I think that would be a great use of this because we really want to get that paid off as soon as we can. The nice thing about paying off credit card debt is, first of all, you have to take the money out. So you're going to pay the tax regardless, unless you were to give it away. But once you go ahead and pay that tax and make sure you set that 20% aside so that you can cover it, the guaranteed return when you pay down debt is equal to the interest rate you're no longer paying. And so if you're paying somewhere between, well, on average, 12 to 17% in interest to your credit card, that's a great use of this money because we want to get that $30,000 eliminated just as quickly as we can. And this would get you headed in that direction with a lump sum. How are you approaching the paying off of the debt right now? Are you just paying the minimum each month or are you adding something to it?
I tried to pay as much as possible, more than what the minimum.
Okay. So that would be what I would recommend as step number one is once you know what that required minimum is, you take that out, you set the taxes aside, and then let's go ahead and use this money to, if you don't need it for some other purpose, to pay down the credit card debt. I might also look, Marie, at what we call a credit counseling program or debt management. Our friends at ChristianCreditCounselors.org could get your interest rates reduced and get you on one fixed monthly payment that with the reduction of the interest rates would allow you to pay that debt off 80% faster. It's not debt settlement. You're not going to get behind or miss any payments. It's just a way through debt management for you to get the interest rates reduced, which will really go a long way toward helping you get this paid off. Anytime you have debt of over $4,000, debt management is my preferred approach on how you pay it back in full and as quickly as possible with as little in interest as possible. So I would check that out at ChristianCreditCounselors.org. But in terms of the RMD, I would use it to pay down that debt. Okay.
What about, could you tell me a little bit more about the qualified annuity?
Well, I was talking about a qualified charitable distribution, but I can share with you about annuity as well. So a qualified annuity is basically just a retirement vehicle where you would put money into a tax-deferred environment. When you go in, you get a deduction. So the contributions to a qualified annuity are deducted from an investor's gross earnings. And so you would have a deduction against that amount. It's not subject to federal taxes. And then you would either, it would grow based on either it being a fixed annuity with a guaranteed return on it, or a variable annuity, which has underlying subaccounts or mutual funds, and you would participate in the upside. In light of your situation, though, with the $30,000 in credit card debt, I wouldn't recommend that just because you're going to see much greater long-term success by getting that debt paid off as quickly as you can. And then once you have paid that off, you could turn around and take all that you were sending to those credit cards and then begin funding either an annuity or an investment account that would be money you could save for the future. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome. We appreciate your call. To Miami, Florida, Margaret, you're next on the program. How can I help?
Hi, Rob.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm calling because I'll be 32 in August, and I have $20,000 in savings, and it's just sitting there. I don't know anything about the market, and I listen to your show all the time, and I'm just here to just listen to take some advice from you as to what can I do with this $20,000. I plan on buying a house, but the housing market, everything is so expensive, so I'm just like, I don't know what to do. Please help.
Yeah, Margaret, this $20,000, does that include what I would call your emergency fund, or is this separate from your liquid savings?
That's everything.
Okay, so I would start by saying I wouldn't invest anything that is less than 3 to 6 months worth of your expenses. So take your monthly expenses times at a minimum 3 months, at the maximum 6 months, and let's keep that in liquid savings. If you want to invest the rest of it and you don't have any consumer debt, then I'd say that's great. One option to look at right now, as long as you're willing to wait 12 months, would be I-bonds, inflation bonds. They're paying about 9.6% right now, backed by the U.S. government. You can learn more at treasurydirect.gov. But if you want to be able to buy that house in less than 12 months, we need to keep all of it in liquid savings. So let's not invest anything that you don't have at least a one-year time horizon on. Stay on the line. We'll talk a little bit more off the air, and we'll be right back with more Money Wise on American Family Radio.
Hello, I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network, a growing national network of pastors committed to the authority of Scripture and preaching the whole counsel of God. We believe biblical obedience is the foundation for revival, and impacting our culture for Christ is our duty. For too long, the pulpits of America have been silent on the important issues such as marriage and family and assault on our liberty. Join us in the battle for truth on Stand in the Gap weekend, Sunday evenings at 6 p.m. on American Family Radio, and visit us at AmericanPastorsNetwork.org.
God's Word is packed with life-changing wisdom about your finances, and MoneyWise is here to help you and millions of others learn to be wise stewards. As a nonprofit organization, we rely on help from MoneyWise patrons, supporters of this mission, to help us continue and expand our outreach. Has God provided financial answers for you through this ministry? If so, please consider becoming a monthly MoneyWise patron. Visit MoneyWise.org and click Give on the homepage.
When you hear this,
this is American Family News.
You know what follows is the truth. Your news from a Christian perspective.
Hundreds of teachers are going to have to walk into that school building, and they are forced to swallow political ideology that in many cases violates their very faith and conscience.
If you miss it at the top of the hour, American Family News podcasts are available at AFN.net. And sign up for our daily news brief at AFN.net.
Investing is more than just returns. It's an expression of who you are and what you value. Does the way you invest your money reflect your identity as a Christian?
At Eventide, we design investments for performance and a better world, so you can invest with the confidence to reach your financial goals while remaining true to your Christian values and commitments. We call this investing that makes the world rejoice. More is available at investeventide.com. That's investeventide.com.
By the grace of God, American Family Association is making a difference.
Bert Harper, co-host of Exploring the Word.
And we have set our face as a flint to stay true to God and His Word.
Contact the AFA Foundation today to learn how you can shore up permanent income for your retirement years while supporting the culture-transforming work of the American Family Association. Call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
If you're investing for retirement or any other goal, you may be wondering if it's possible to enjoy both profit and peace of mind no matter what's happening in the market. Sound Mind Investing has a short video webinar on that topic at soundmindinvesting.org. SMI has helped tens of thousands of Christians learn to be wise and faithful stewards in the area of investing. Profit and peace of mind no matter what's happening in the market at soundmindinvesting.org.
Thrilled to have you along today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio, biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Let's head back to the questions. We'll begin today in Philadelphia, PA. Samantha, thank you for calling. Go right ahead.
Oh, hi. I am 69 years old. I just retired from nursing. My husband is 70. He is still working, but he works at a physical job, so I don't know how much longer. We're both starting Social Security. He at 70, me at 69.
Okay.
Our retirement fund is very limited. He has an IRA with about $45,000 in it, and he has it in a money market thing. And I am getting from my work, I'm going to have an annuity plan, which isn't very much money, and that will be enough to pay our taxes, our property taxes. I am also getting about $30,000 in a lump sum, and I have $50,000 marked in a savings account just for retirement. So that's all we have. My question is, the $30,000 in a lump sum, what should I do with it? And the $50,000 is sitting in a retirement making absolutely nothing. In the market that we're living in and the age that we are, should we just sit tight and hope for the best, or should we take some chances and try to make a little money?
Yeah, just a quick question or two. The $50,000 you said, I thought I heard you say it was in savings, but then you said it was in a retirement account. Where is that located?
No, it's just a savings account that I earmarked for our retirement, yeah.
And have you put together your retirement budget yet, Samantha? Do you have a sense of what it's going to take for you all to live each month?
We do. I mean, we're going to live very modestly, but we'll probably get about $65,000 combined Social Security.
Okay.
And...
Sure. So your budget balances on Social Security alone if you live frugally.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And you don't have any other savings apart from the $50,000 and then the $30,000 lump sum, correct?
I just have like an emergency fund, about $16,000 in my another savings account.
Well, in this season of life, I'd love for you to have at least 6 months worth of expenses. And so if you all are thinking that you're going to be living on roughly, you know, $5,000 a month, I would love for you to have at least $30,000 in liquid savings that's just in a high-yield savings account. You could use Marcus or Ally Bank or Capital One 360. These will all pay you right now about 0.8%, almost 1% a year, no fees. You could link it to your checking account, but that's going to give you a good emergency fund to fall back on with the unexpected. Beyond that, you could take then the balance. Let's say that's $30,000. That would leave you the $45,000 in the IRA plus the $50,000 the $30,000 lump sum, I'd love to see you actually roll that to an IRA. Because if you don't need that right now, rolling that into an IRA will create a non-taxable event, which would be great. And then you could use the $50,000 in savings. You can earmark $30,000 of that for your emergency fund. And then you'd have $20,000 left. One option to consider, in addition to the investing that you would do with the 45 and the 30, so a total of 75,000 in the two retirement accounts, with the money left over in the savings account, you could put in 10,000 each into what are called I bonds. Have you heard me talking about those the last several weeks?
I have not.
All right. Inflation bonds are issued by the U.S. Treasury, so they're backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government. They're paying 9.62% right now, annualized, because of what's going on with inflation, and they're basically risk-free because they're backed by the government. You can only buy up to 10,000 in electronic I-bonds right there on the Treasury's website at treasurydirect.gov, $10,000 per year per individual. So between the two of you, you could buy $20,000 in I-bonds and get nearly 10% over the next year. You've got to leave it there for a year, and then if you take it out in less than 5 years, you would give up 3 months' worth of interest, which is a very modest, you know, penalty. So that would essentially allow you to take 30,000 of the 50 in savings, stick that in an online savings account, take the other 20 and buy the I bonds and get nearly 10% over the next year in a guaranteed return. And then the 45 and the 30, I think, could be invested. Either you do that yourself with like a robo-advisor through Betterment or Schwab Intelligent Portfolios, or you could hire an investment advisor, somebody who can actually make those decisions for you. Does that all make sense?
It does. It sounds wonderful. Yeah.
Good. Well, I think that's the way to go. And that would give you that, you know, money that could be growing on a modest basis. So if you need something down the road, you could tap into it. But I'd keep a long-term perspective on that. And then it would give you the 10% on the two $10,000 electronic I-bonds and then plenty of emergency savings. And then you all just buckle down, tighten your belt, make sure you don't live beyond your means so you don't rack up any kind of credit card debt or anything, and just try to live on Social Security, and I think you guys should be moving in the right direction. So all the best to you, Samantha, in this new season of life. I'm excited for you, and if we can help you more along the way, don't hesitate to reach out. God bless you, and thank you for your call today. Next, from Christy. Christy writes, I have 6 credit cards, but I only use one of them. Should I close the other 5? Will that hurt my credit score? It's a great question, Christy, that we get often, and here are my thoughts. Number one, if you have multiple credit cards that you don't use, I would try to close them with a few caveats. The reason to close them is it's one less account you have to stay on top of. Keep in mind, if the account is open, it has the potential to be compromised and compromised fraudulently. And so you're going to want to monitor that account. If it's closed, you no longer have to do that. Now, I would close no more than 2 to 3 every 6 months. So if you have 5, let's do that over a year's time. The only reason why you wouldn't want to close any of them is if in the next 30 to 45 days you were going to be seeking new credit. So let's say you were going to be applying for a mortgage, refinancing, looking for a car loan. If that was the case, you would want to avoid closing these accounts. But if not, then I'd go ahead and close 2 to 3. You may see a temporary drop in your credit score if there's a change in credit utilization or if that history comes off your account, but it will be temporary and it will come back fairly quickly. So I would get those closed. Simplifying your financial life is never a bad thing. And Christy, we appreciate you writing in. If you have a question for us, feel free to send it along. Questions@moneywise.org. We'll try to get it on the air. At the very least, one of our coaches will get back to you with a personal response. Questions@moneywise.org. Stay with us. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
You probably have a strategy for your finances, your career, even your retirement. But do you have a strategy for your giving? At the National Christian Foundation, we can help you create a giving strategy to inspire your family, maximize your resources, and leave a lasting legacy of faith. To learn how, visit moneywise.org/NCF.
Here's Pastor Jeff Shree with From His Heart Ministries.
How many people come to church and they're chained to a bitter spirit and all sorts of problems, chained to greed and selfishness? Even when they want to break free, they can't seem to break free. Worship Him and praise Him and let Him remove the chains.
Learn to break the chains forever through Christ. Join Pastor Jeff Shreve on From His Heart, weeknights at 6 Central here on American Family Radio.
Christian Healthcare Ministries enables believers to show love for one another by sharing each other's health costs. Through CHM's voluntary health cost sharing programs, members uplift each other spiritually and financially. CHM is an eligible option under the Affordable Care Act and a Better Business Bureau accredited charity. Interested? Learn more by calling 800-791-6225 or online at chministries.org.
What's most important to you when it comes to choosing your financial advisor? Someone who's aligned with your biblical values? How about someone who will take the time to explain your options in plain English? Certified Kingdom Advisors are professionals who meet high standards in competence and integrity and have been trained to offer biblical financial advice. To find a Certified Kingdom Advisor in your area, visit MoneyWise.org and click the link that says Find a CKA. That's MoneyWise.org.
AFA is no longer dependent on Facebook or YouTube to live stream our original programming. As of now, American Family Radio shows like Today's Issues, The Core, Airing the Addisons, and The Hamilton Corner are streaming live on the AFA streaming app. Independent live streaming is the next step as we come out from among them and separate ourselves unto the Lord. Search AFA Streaming or visit streaming.afa.net to sign up.
How should we as Christians think about investing? What if we could invest our money in a way that aligns with what we believe? At Eventide, we believe it is possible to love God and love our neighbor in the very practice of investing. We design investments for performance and a better world so you can invest for the future with a sense of wholeness and purpose. We call this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at investeventide.com.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Thrilled to have you along today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio, biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Just a reminder, we're not here today, so we can't take your live calls. Let's head right back to the phones. Crossville, Tennessee. Helen, thank you for calling today. How can I help you?
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I have a grandson that's 19, and he wants to establish a strong credit rating. Uh-huh. Could you tell me some ways that he could do that?
Yeah, Helen, you know, a couple of thoughts. Number one is really just lean into helping him understand God's perspective on handling money. In fact, when we're done here today, you hang on the line. I'd like to send you Howard Dayton's book, Your Money Counts. Give that to him as our gift, and that'll begin to establish really just a healthy understanding of God owning it all and our role as stewards and what that means for giving and saving and building wealth and avoiding debt. All of those key principles will be unpacked in that book. I think that'd be a great starting point. It's also great to start to think about how you build a credit score, because that's going to be useful when he wants to buy a car someday or get a mortgage to buy a house. It's also used for employment considerations and even insurance premiums. So the key is, we don't want to encourage the wrong disciplines. We don't want to encourage him to get into debt simply to boost his credit score. So what would it look like for him to establish credit, but do it in a way that's healthy and responsible? I think number one is, we've got to teach him about establishing a spending plan. So he's got to understand the concept of budgeting and only using money for budgeted items, literally giving every dollar a name by category. And then we could use something called a secured credit card for him to begin to make payments for things in the budget, but that are paid for on that secured credit card. Now, what is a secured card versus an unsecured card? Well, a typical credit card that you and I might think of would be what's considered an unsecured card. They extend a line of credit to you based on your credit worthiness. You can charge up to it, and then if you don't pay it, they can try to seek a judgment, but there's no collateral there for them to essentially essentially go after you. Whereas with a secure card, you actually put a certain amount on deposit with the banking institution. So you might make a $300, $400, or $500 deposit. They'll extend a credit line up to the amount on deposit. You then charge against it. A budgeted item. It could be even just a few dollars a month, maybe a recurring subscription that he's already planned for. He pays it off in full every month, but then he's reported as an on-time payer to the credit bureau. So those faithful payments will be reported and establish a credit history and ultimately a credit score. And the longer he does this, the higher the score will be. Once you have a credit score in the high 600s, you could probably get a car loan. You could head to bankrate.com to see who has the best secured cards right now. You'll find that the Capital One secured card has no annual fee. Discover has one called Discover It that's a secured card, also one from Citibank called the Citi Secured MasterCard. Any one of those three would be great, no fees, and would be a great way to establish credit without the risk of going into debt because he can't charge beyond what's on deposit. Does that make sense?
Yes, makes good sense. Thank you.
Good. All right, Helen, thanks for calling today. Stay on the line. We'll get your information and get that book right out to you. And you tell your grandson that we're rooting for him. Let's head to Nashville, Tennessee. Tracy, thanks for calling. Go right ahead.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you for your ministry. My question is I was divorced 5 years ago, and I have an IRA that is at a local branch, a bank.
Okay. All
right. And they've made the checkout to the bank and myself.
Yeah,
I went in a branch today. They told me that I would either A, have to open a personal account, open a CD, or open an IRA. If I do the personal account, I do understand I have to pay taxes on it, and I don't want to do that. So would it be better to do the CD or the IRA?
Well, and this is coming from an IRA, correct?
It's coming from an IRA that was in my husband's name.
Yeah,
now
okay.
This is money that's in my name.
Okay. But in order to keep it in a non-taxable environment, you would need to deposit into the IRA. Are your plans, Tracy, at this point to let this money continue to grow, or are you wanting to take a full distribution and use it for some other purpose right now?
No, I would like it to grow.
Okay. Then let's keep it in the tax-deferred environment, which means you need to open that IRA at the bank. Given that it was already made payable to the bank and to you, you're going to have to start with the IRA at the bank. Now, once it's been deposited in your IRA, you could go open another IRA at any other institution. It doesn't have to be at your bank. It could be at Charles Schwab or TD Ameritrade or Vanguard. And then you could always transfer the IRA to another institution. All of that is not going to be a taxable event to you. And there's no reason to pay taxes on this right now, given the fact that you don't want to access the money. Let's keep it in the tax-deferred environment so that as you invest it and it grows, the taxes don't place any drag on the investment performance. And then when you're ready to use it someday down the road, hopefully when it's a much larger account than it is today, plus anything you add to it, which you can make contributions to the IRA, then you would pay tax on it as it comes out.
Great. All right. Sounds wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you so much, and God bless you in your ministry.
Well, thank you for your kind remarks, Tracy. I appreciate that very much, and all the best to you. To Indianapolis we go. Greg, thanks for calling, sir. Go right ahead.
Yeah, just had heard you briefly speaking some other day that they maybe went with Fidelity Investment Company, but maybe you mentioned Charles Schwab, another company, and I didn't know if you have companies that you rate and are the best ones to actually be investing with.
Yeah. Are you looking for the actual investment companies like the fund families that make the investment decisions? Or are you talking about a custodian that's simply an investment brokerage account from which you direct your own investing? What is it you're looking for?
It's more just that the companies like a Charles Schwab or whatever. And,
okay.
Ones who you just invest through and they take in. Hopefully make changes, even if I call, they definitely make changes that I request.
Sure. Yeah, I don't have one that's a particular favorite of mine. I mean, the ones that you mentioned are very highly regarded. Charles Schwab, Fidelity, both would be among the top of the class. Vanguard, it's a fund family known for their low-fee mutual funds, but they're very high quality as well. I would say any of those three would be good. If you're looking for what's called a robo-advisor, which is essentially where, based on the questions and answers that are provided by you, they build a low-cost, indexed-based ETF portfolio. So you'd get a broad cross-section of the market, you know, at about 20 basis points or 1/5 of 1%. I like the Schwab Intelligent Portfolios for that if you're looking for more of an automated approach. But if it's really just a brokerage firm from which you would do your investing, I think Fidelity or Schwab or Vanguard would be great choices. Okay?
Well, thank you, Rob.
All righty. Hey, I saw a note here that you were interested in faith-based investing as well, and I love that. This is an exciting, growing segment of the investing landscape where you invest in fund families and companies that reflect your Christian values. Check out some of the investment companies on the MoneyWise.org website, Eventide, Guidestone. You can also look at Inspire, some wonderful fund families doing great faith-based investing. Greg, thanks for your call today. Just a reminder, we're not here today, so we can't take your live calls. Stay with us. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with more MoneyWise on American Family Radio.
For American Family Radio, I'm Charles Morris with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. What's the catch? How many times do we ask this question in our lives? Maybe it's an ad in a magazine or one of those infomercials on TV, some product that just seems too good to be true. We're usually right to be suspicious of these things, of course. After all, how often is anything as good and easy as it seems? But the greatest news we could ever hear does not have a catch. It's too good not to be true. As the Apostle Paul said in Romans 10, if you declare with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. And that's it. No catch. No fine print. Call on Jesus. You will be saved. It's that simple. Go deeper in God's Word daily with Anchor Devotional. Try it out at getanchor.com.
Your kids are grown and you're in a new stage of life. It's a challenging adjustment, but author Dr. Jim Burns says now is the time to make a fresh start. And his new book, Finding Joy in the Empty Nest, will equip you with practical biblical advice. Learn to manage big issues like aging parents, managing a fixed income, or how to help your children. Request your copy of Finding Joy in the Empty Nest with a gift of $25 or more at moneywise.org.
If you have money in a retirement account or just a general investing account, you know the stock market can sometimes be like a roller coaster. But it is possible to enjoy both profit and peace of mind in investing, no matter what's happening in the market. You can see a short video webinar on that topic at soundmindinvesting.org. Since 1990, Sound Mind Investing has sought to offer financial wisdom for living well. soundmindinvesting.org.
Thanks for joining us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, your host. So glad you're along with us today. Here in our final segment, let's head right back to the questions and welcome Agnes from Plainfield, Illinois. Agnes, how can I help you?
Yeah, thank you for answering my call. Lost my husband in April, and we just finished the burial. The only thing I have done is to stop the Social Security because they say I have to stop it. And when I went to the Social Security, they were saying that I started taking spousal benefits. It would limit my income, which I don't want. So I told them I don't want it now until I reach my full retirement, which will be in August. My question right now is, where do I start? Because he has a will, and also he has a financial advisor with the bank, which I've already made an appointment to meet them next week. Apart from that, where do I start? Do I have to get a probate? We have a home we bought together. think the mortgage won't be a problem because by the time I take the spousal benefit and what I'm making, I'll be able to pay the mortgage. But
okay.
I'm kind of in a limbo here where to start.
Yes. Well, first of all, Agnes, I'm so sorry to hear about your husband's passing. I know this must be an incredibly challenging season. I'm glad to hear you're thinking through the next steps, and that's really the key. You know, the first thing is to not make any significant decisions for a while, but just to really get acquainted with what you have, beginning with tracking all of your expenses and really establishing a budget so you know what it's going to take for you to cover all of your bills. We want to keep all those bills paid promptly and make sure everything stays current. It's also important for you to determine how much you have in both assets and liabilities. So the amount that you have available to you, both in liquid accounts as well as investments and retirement accounts, and then any debts that you have, any liabilities, get that down on paper. And I'm going to send you to a website that has a lot of this to kind of walk you through it. Then you want to organize all your financial documents. Try to collect as much as you can, any insurance policies and statements of accounts, things like that. Get them all in one place. And I think you really need to try to talk to other wise people about their decisions and your choices and really just get some counsel as you navigate this. I'm glad to hear you've already talked to Social Security. That's a big one. So you determine how's the best way to maximize both what you have in survivor's benefits as well as maximizing what you can earn on your own record as well. And then we'll want to at some point look at any kind of investments that need to be taken care of. If you have any credit cards, you're going to want to, if it was in your husband's name and you were just an authorized user, you're going to want to open a credit card in your own name, because once they're notified that of his passing, that account will be closed. You also will need to alert the probate court of your husband's passing and present the will if it wasn't filed there before. Are you the executor?
Yeah, when we, I'm the executor, yeah, in the way we put everything in my name to.
Yes. Okay. Very good. Yeah. That's excellent. Well, what I would do is I would head to a great website from our friends Valerie and Melanie, Valerie Neff and Miriam Neff, mother and daughter, that have put together a website called widowconnection.com. It is tremendous. And there's a section there that says For Widows, and then you could click on the finances section, and you'll find just a lot of helpful information on what are the first eight things you need to do. There's a worksheet there to get your monthly expenses captured, your debt, your financial statement, your information and monthly expenses. All of that's there. And this will be a great resource to you, Agnes, just to determine what are your next steps from here. And I think it'll be really well organized and give you some great information. Okay. It's widowconnection.com would be the place to go. All right.
Okay, thank you so much. And
okay.
Then just before, another question regarding his credit card. He doesn't have much, but he has some credit cards which I can pay off. And then one of the investment company, I don't know, he said it's Auri also, they called me because he hasn't taken the minimum redistribution before. And
right.
Then they called me that my name is the beneficiary, and they were going to send me a form so that I can start withdrawing from it. I don't want it now, so do I roll it over into IRA or roll it into a new IRA or roll it over in my IRA I have with principal? I have an IRA with principal, and
yeah.
And then... I don't know what to do. Do I go? I don't want individual distribution because they said if I die, that's it. We will not continue. So I would want it to roll over into an IRA. Do I
sure.
go with the
Yeah,
bank?
I would do it into a separate IRA just to keep this inherited IRA separate as a spousal IRA versus the one that you already had. And then you want to get some tax advice just to make sure you're taking out the proper amount for this calendar year. If you have a CPA, I would reach out to that person. If you don't, I would find one.
Okay, I have.
All right.
Okay.
Very good. So, yeah, you'll want to open a new IRA to get this transferred over to, and then contact your CPA and ask he or she to help you determine how much you need to take as a required minimum. Agnes, I know there's a lot on you right now, so get some wise counsel, somebody who can walk with you. Check out widowconnection.com and just take it one step at a time. Don't try to do too much. You will get there. It'll get easier as you move through each of these steps, but I'm glad to hear you're making some good progress, and may the Lord bless you. Syracuse, New York. Robert, you're next on the program. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, I have a question. I wanted to get your perspective on prepaying for a funeral with a funeral home versus life insurance or a POD account.
Sure.
Which,
The POD, payable on death account, just makes things really simple because then the money's available immediately at your death to be able to handle, and you can do pre-planning without prepaying. I mean, the only downside to prepaying is it can sometimes be a problem. You just need to ask these questions first. Number one, what happens to the money that you've prepaid? Some states have different requirements for handling funds paid for prearranged funeral services. What happens to the interest income on the money? Are you protected if the firm you dealt with goes out of business? Can you cancel the contract if you change your mind and get a refund? What happens if you move to a different area or die while away from home? Some prepaid funeral plans can be transferred, but often at an added cost. So I think you just need to understand some of those things. But I think what's essential is that you do pre-planning just to make sure that a lot of those important decisions have been made in advance so your loved ones aren't having to do that during a difficult time, and make sure that the funds are available, and a POD account could be a great way to accomplish that.
Yeah, that's what I was leaning toward, because I've read some people not recommending going through the funeral home, just that, you know, it's out of your control then. And
yes. Yeah. And I think that's the big reason why a lot of folks, you know, don't go the prepaid route, even though they certainly want to make sure they're well planned. So, but you do your own homework there, Robert. You know, you certainly could go either way if you feel like you have a good sense of where you'd want to be buried and you want to just get it taken care of in advance. But I would be sure to ask some of those important questions first. We appreciate your call. Jim's in Illinois. Jim, thanks for calling. Go right ahead, sir.
Hi, I was wanted to follow up on the bond that you were talking about. My question was, if you redeem them earlier, do you get your full $10,000 back if you had invested $10,000?
Yeah, you do. So the I-bond interest is compounded semi-annually. You've got to leave it in there for a year, but when you take out the money after a year, and if, as long as it's before than 5 years, then you would just give up the previous 3 months' interest. So you'd get back your original principal, and then you'd get that compounded interest based on the 9.62% for the amount of time it was in there, minus 3 months' worth of interest as a penalty for taking it out more than a year, but less than 5 years.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we appreciate your call. Thanks very much. Our final question today, Birmingham. Nick, thanks for calling. Go right ahead.
Yes, sir. I got a question. We've got, me and my wife have been saving for quite some time to buy vehicles. We wanted to pay cash for our vehicles. But then it started thinking to us about maybe we should invest where our investment will not only pay for our vehicles payments, but also put some extra money in our pockets. The vehicles, of course, the prices keep going up further and further. So we've got enough money to pay cash for both brand new vehicles. But I don't want to take that money without, you know, if I can invest that type of money and get a good return on investment, would that be our better solution? We're debt free other than our home.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you're going to pay for, are you looking to buy new cars or used cars?
Yes, sir. No, new cars. We keep all of our vehicles for about 10 years.
Okay.
And then we trade them off.
So unless you get some kind of incentive, you're going to pay around 4%. So your after-tax return has to be greater than that for you to, get a benefit there. So I guess that's the question. You know, I mean, obviously the market's quite volatile right now. If you take a long-term perspective, you could say this is a great time to invest and, you know, take advantage of the the market's declines down more than 20% from our high. I'd be okay with that as long as you're willing to stay the course, because we could be down another 15 or 20% before it recovers. So I think you've just got to make that decision for yourself. Would you feel more peace of mind knowing you own your cars and you're out of debt? Or are you going to take a 10-year view and try to invest and take advantage of the market? I could go either way. I think you two need to just pray about it and think it through. We appreciate your call. Folks, that's going to do it for us today. So thankful that you joined us. Thank you to Devin Patrick, our engineer and producer, Pat Montague, who handled our phone screening today, as well as Mr. Jim Henry, providing me with great research. Hope you'll come back and join us tomorrow as we apply God's wisdom to your financial decisions and choices. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.